Hello there. Welcome again to my podcast, History's Great Mysteries. I'm your host, Nick, and I hope you've all been staying safe out there. But in any event, let me take your Thursday and hopefully make it a bit better with this episode that I have for you today. But before I begin, I want to take a second to just talk about how I have this dream about over the next few months, I'd really like to start branching out and tackling mysteries from around the world, like truly from around the world, because for those of you who don't know, I do live in America, and I might be slightly jaded and slanted towards doing stories that have origins in America because, you know, that's what I know, that's what I know the best, and I have these stories in my background. But by all means, if you are a listener with a story to share from your background, I would absolutely love to hear it. So my question to you guys is that if you can, I would love it if you could message me through my Facebook page, which is just History's Great Mysteries on Facebook. And tell me the story that you have in mind, that you have in your background or culture or country that you think would be a good addition to this podcast. And if you can message me, I'd absolutely love to do further research with it. And then if it all works out, we can make it a full-fledged episode. And this invitation extends to anyone that's listening at any time in the future as well. I would always love to hear from you guys. But anyways, today I am crazy excited to bring you what just might be the first and largest mystery in the history of America. This mystery begins way back before the country was officially started, way back during the 16th century when England was first sending ships over to the new American colonies. Imagine hundreds of settlers sit down and make a colony on this new American island that they found, only to completely disappear off the face of the earth a few short years later, without a trace. I speak, of course, of the famous lost colony of Roanoke. So our story begins way back in the year 1584, as England has just set its sights, started to set its sights on colonizing and settling this new land, the Americas. So this is after Christopher Columbus has, you know, found it, and then they realize it is a new country, a new continent. And the Spaniards, Spain, which was their, you know, rival country at the time, is also trying to colonize this new land. So they're kind of, all right, we need to do this quickly, we need to get this going. So a man by the name of Sir Walter Raleigh, who eventually gained Queen Elizabeth I's permission to sail several ships across the Atlantic Ocean that were equipped with the goods and the people to begin a settlement over in this new landmass, North America. So, you know, Queen Elizabeth I gives him these exclusive rights to begin a colony wherever he sees fit. So they don't actually know where yet. But somewhere in their mind, that can both, you know, provide these settlers what they need to actually live there, you know, food, but then also importantly, they need to be able to stay out of the prying eyes of Spain, who again is also sailing up and down this new landmass, and they want to make sure that they can set up a colony that's free from the prying eyes of the Spaniards, and so that there isn't any kind of conflict there. So with these, you know, ideas in mind, Sir Walter Raleigh and his ship sail across the Atlantic Ocean, and they make it over to the coast of what is present-day North Carolina and Virginia, in that area there. And what they eventually decide upon is this smallish island, and it's just about 10 miles across, and it's within this outer bank landmass, I guess you could say. So it's this string of islands that are connected. And then within that outer bank, there's a innermore island that is this Roanoke Island that they decide upon. And they do this because that outer bank of islands will, you know, block the sight of anyone who's actually out in the ocean looking inwards. They won't be able to see this inner island that's protected by that outer bank. And on first sight, they also decide, yeah, this 10-mile-long island can also serve for everything else that we need. So They decide that they're going to go in. So what they do is they go in through this inlet on that outer bank, this very shallow and narrow area where they think they can make their ship through to get to this island. But upon going through that inlet, they actually kind of sink their ship a little bit, not completely, but they do damage their ship and a lot of seawater gets in. And so what this means is that all of their supplies, their food, a lot of it at least, gets damaged by the seawater. And their original plan to just sit down and just settle right there then and there is kind of ruined. Now they don't have enough provisions to last. And so what they kind of decide to do is that they're going to try to make the most of it. So they end up setting up on that island anyways. And they meet these Native Americans, these Native American tribes. Some of them actually live on the island already. And then some other tribes are just nearby, right? And initially, the Native Americans are, and these Europeans are also, are kind of working together a little bit. They have good relations, it could be said, to begin with. But as things go on and as Native Americans, you know, meet and talk with these Europeans, what ends up happening, and I'm sure you've heard this story many times before, is that a lot of these Native Americans end up dying mysteriously. And later historians look back on this and say, yeah, you know, it was the pathogens that these Europeans were carrying that were silently killing these Native Americans. But at the time, the Native Americans didn't know why. But they knew that, you know, we go in and hang out and talk with these Europeans and then we die. So they thought that the Europeans had some sort of hidden agenda. They were doing this on purpose. They were killing us on purpose. So the relations kind of end up souring a little bit. And this is also compounded by the fact that the island, Roanoke Island, ended up not being very productive for crops or growing anything. And so they were running out of food. The Europeans were running out of food. And so they started relying on these Native Americans nearby for food. And, you know, one thing led to another. And now they're not really allies anymore. Now they're kind of distrusting of each other. And one of the leaders of this European group, Ralph Lane, decides that he's going to take the initiative and not allow the Native Americans to retaliate in any kind of way. So what he decides to do is he decides to kill Chief Wiginia, who lived on Roanoke, and like he beheaded him. It was very brutal. And he like put his head on a spike to show the Native Americans that they shouldn't be aggressive towards us. And that was obviously the probably last straw for relations between Native Americans and the Europeans at that time. And the, but again, you have this problem of they have a lack of food, so they didn't really know what else to do. And at this time, you know, now Native Americans and the colonists are just almost in a full out war. And so what these people decide to do is like, okay, we're going to give up. And again, they didn't have the provisions to provide for themselves. So they get back on their ship, the remaining ships that weren't wrecked, and sail back to England. And so that was just a complete failure, that attempt at colonizing Roanoke there. But that was the first attempt. And in, you know, when you look back on it, the biggest mistake they made was one being not having correct diplomatic relations with the Native Americans who could have helped them. But then also two, a lot of the people there who made that first attempt at colonizing Roanoke were just these military men. It wasn't men, women, children. It wasn't people who actually wanted to, quote unquote, settle. They kind of wanted to build fortification there and kind of just impose their will. And so they didn't really go about it the right way, needless to say. Later in the spring of 1587, a historical figure and an explorer and artist by the name of John White decided that he was going to make a second attempt. So he also talks to Queen Elizabeth I and secures funding. He gets three ships. And then this time, to remedy the old problem that they had, he, instead of bringing just military men, he decides that he's going to bring real people who could have diplomatic relations, who could be civilized. And so he's bringing 115-ish people across the Atlantic Ocean with tons of food, tons of supplies. And these people also include his pregnant daughter, Eleanor Dare. So the plan was that he was going to sail back to the same area where they had tried to colonize earlier at that island of Roanoke. But their plan was, okay, we're not actually going to do Roanoke this time because, you know, we have bad relations with the Native American tribes there. And also it's not that good for providing food and crops and growth and stuff like that. So they're like, okay, we're going to go a little bit further north. And so they sail across Atlantic Ocean. They get to this area and there is a, technically speaking, John White, he was decided by the colonists there to become the governor of this new colony, the governor. But But on the ship ride over there, he wasn't technically the captain. The captain was this man by the name of Samuel Fernandez, who, for whatever reason during this time, and there's some conflicting reports here, he decided when they get to this area along the coastline that they're not actually going to go further north. Let's just try Roanoke again. And I'm not really sure what the thought process was behind that. There's not a lot of good documentation behind it, but he just decided, let's do Roanoke. And everyone agreed, including John White. So lo and behold, they sail through this inlet again and go into Roanoke. Now, 115 settlers get off the boat, jump onto the beach, and they're like, yep, this is what we're doing. So they start building immediately. But it becomes evident that the Native American tribes nearby aren't immediately willing to forgive the Europeans from their last arrangement from what happened 3 years ago. So in just within the first few days, a man by the name of George Howe was a colonist. He was ambushed on the island by a group of natives and shot with arrows and then killed brutally. And this obviously was a message to the Europeans, to the colonists there, that all is not forgiven and they're not wanted there. But luckily, and this might have been their saving grace, the colonists had a Native American in their midst, a man by the name of Manteo, who had actually been with John White in England, who had been over in England learning about the European culture, and he was now back over in the Americas where he had lived, where he was born originally. And he kind of served as the friendly diplomat and ally to perhaps aid in the relations between the other Native American tribes. But Manteo was a member of the Croatoan tribe, which was a tribe that was located about 50 miles south of the Roanoke Island. It's another kind of island that's part of the Outer Banks, the Croatoan Island. And that's where he was a member of the tribe there. So yeah, he had influence over the Croatoan tribe, but he didn't have any influence over the motions or actions of the other tribes that were closer to Roanoke that served as the immediate threats to these colonists. So a little was done there to ease the tension with the nearby tribes. So needless to say, things are a little bit tense on Roanoke, but things go ahead. The building of the settlement is underway. Buildings are being built, right? And quickly, these group of over 100 people decide that they're going to need more tools, more supplies, more food, and more people if this whole colonization is to succeed. So they talk it over, and they eventually chose John White, the governor, that he should go back to England and get all these things and then come right back. And he's obviously reluctant. Like, obviously, he has his daughter here, and his daughter actually just had her baby. She was pregnant, and she just had her baby, who was, fun fact, the first ever person born in America of English parents. So the first European baby born in America. And so he has reasons not to want to leave. But eventually and reluctantly, they convince him, okay, he decides that he's going to sail back over to England to secure more supplies, more food, and then return immediately. So John White sails back across the ocean to England, and upon returning, he sees that his country is at war, or in the beginnings of war, and Queen Elizabeth I declares that all boats, all vessels, shall not be used for anything other than wartime activity. So essentially, John White becomes trapped in England until this war ends. So he can't secure any kind of vessels or boats to sail back to Roanoke. So lo and behold, 3 years go by, and in 1590, he finally secures a few boats to return. And so he sails back across the Atlantic Ocean, and he's sailing up the coastline towards Roanoke. And he approaches the island, right? He comes close, he fires cannons to announce his arrival, but doesn't see any kind of answers or anything like that. So he goes through the inlet, goes into the island, and then hops down onto the beaches there. And initially, he doesn't see anybody. What he does see, though, are some fresh footprints in the sand, which is interesting, and we'll get back to that. But he continues on into the island towards where he had left the building of the settlement when he left 3 years ago. And lo and behold, shortly after there, he comes across a tree that has the letter CRO carved into it. Then as he continues on towards the entrance of the colony, he sees a fence post with the word Croatoan carved into it. And this information that I'm spouting out here is known by John White's firsthand account of the endeavors that he wrote down in his notebook later. And as you've been expecting, as I'm gonna get to it here, when he actually walks into the settlement, nobody's there. Everyone is gone, poof, without a trace. No single colonist is there, and very, very little clues as to what happened. You know, he begins investigating, right? Him and his team. And they don't see any sign of distress. They don't see bodies. They don't see bones. There are some items missing, important items, right, that he believes is reasonable for people to take if they're leaving. And then also the small boats that they had left them with are also gone. And they're, like I said, you look into the situation and you have no idea. Like, me and you listening to this have no idea what could have happened. But initially, John White does have some ideas, and he writes about them in his notebook. And he says that, okay, before I left, I had told these colonists that if they were to leave Roanoke Island for whatever reason, they should write into wood where they are going, right? So he sees these carvings of Croatoan, which, again, is an island that's about 50 miles south of Roanoke, where they have friendly relations with the Native American tribe there. And so he sees this and he says, okay, awesome. That is exactly what I told them to do. So that must be where they are. Furthermore, he also talks about in his journal that he stipulated that if there was any kind of hostility or they left under duress, they were being attacked for whatever reason, right next to where they're going, they should write a cross to symbolize that they left under duress. But he didn't see this cross anywhere, so he assumed that they had gone to Croatoan peacefully, right? And so, after investigating the island a little bit more, he goes back to the boats and he tells his captain, okay, I think they're on Croatoan. And he tells his captain that's where we should go. So his captain ends up, you know, sailing back out of the inlet, and upon sailing back out of the inlet, he actually damages his ship, and there's actually damage to the anchor as well. And in addition to this, the weather starts to turn foul, and he actually is impeded by a huge storm that makes it so they can't go to Croatoan. And at least on three separate occasions, John White tried to sail to Croatoan, but he was blocked by another storm. And eventually the captain just said, screw it all, we need to sail back to England before anything bad happens. So that means that John White left and sailed back across the Atlantic without ever actually going to Croatoan and without ever seeing his family or the colonists that he had left behind again. And that's where the mystery really begins, is the fact that he never got to confirm that that is where they went. And, you know, things settled down back in England in the 1590s. He died in Europe peacefully, and that really cemented that he never got to have any kind of answers to what actually happened. And you and I, you know, we look back on this situation and we say, okay, probably what happened is that they sailed to Croatoan like they had indicated on the fence post of the carvings, right? But when you look at some of the other facts that I have neglected to say thus far, but I will lead into as we go into our theories here, it's not that straightforward. It really isn't. There are a ton of theories, and as we get more and more information, because this whole lost colony thing is a kind of big deal, and there's been a lot of research into this idea and what happened to it. There's a lot of people that want to know what happened because it's important to the history. And as the research is conducted, it becomes more and more muddled in mystery about what actually happened to these lost colonists. So I will dive in right now to some of the main theories and then end with my own personal theory as to what happened to these colonists at Roanoke. So, obviously, like I said, the first theory is that, yes, the colonists did indeed, very safely, without duress, make it to Croatoan Island, and maybe with the help of Manteo, right? But if you look back at this, you know, it initially solves and answers many of the questions. It explains the carvings. They said Croatoan, that's where they went, that's how they had arranged to communicate with John White upon his return, and that's what they did. But some years later, in 1607, there was another more successful attempt at colonizing America that occurred just north of Roanoke in Jamestown. And this is where we meet the individuals like John Smith, who you may know from the Disney movie Pocahontas. But anyways, A Native American chief one day was speaking with John Smith when he mentioned that there were other Native American tribes south of them in which there were men wearing European clothing. And there were other reports around that time citing Native American children that were born with blonde hair and reasonably, quote-unquote, reasonably white skin and gray eyes. Furthermore, some Native Americans at a later date from that region of Croatoan would claim that some of their ancestors were able to read to read the written English word, which seems to point to the idea that, yes, the colonists did make it to the Croatoan Islands and then assimilated with the Native Americans there. And the reason obviously pops in your head, okay, why did they leave Roanoke? And maybe they ran out of food, right? Because we do know that at this time in that area, there was a drought. So it's possible that Roanoke, being the unhospitable island that it was, they just could not sustain themselves there. It's also possible that there was increasing hostility that we already knew there probably would be with the neighboring tribes around Roanoke that had forced them to move to the safer area of Croatoan. Now, this is a prevailing theory, right? And so there was a lot of excavation and digs going on around the Croatoan island that people were hoping to find evidence that, yes, this is where the lost colonists went. And some artifacts have been recovered since then, namely like the hilt of a European sword, and then also this very interesting ring that was thought to be exactly from the time of the lost colonists that could link these two places together, right? That could link the lost colonists going to Croatoan. But just as our hopes are raised about these artifacts and that, okay, this is the missing link, seem to be dashed just as quickly. As, for instance, that ring that I mentioned, it was eventually analyzed by East Carolina University and then found not to be of the time period of the colonists. And then you also have that hilt of the sword that, yes, it's European in nature, but by no means does it definitively link our lost colonists to that area. It doesn't, it's just because it's European doesn't mean it belonged to the lost colonists, right? Eventually, there were tons of Europeans in the Americas all over the place, so it doesn't definitively link, and that's what we need, is that definitive link, the definitive proof to say, yes, the lost colonists did end up at Croatoan safely. So another theory that pops up is that they took these smaller boats and tried to sail somewhere. Some say they tried to sail back to England, which would have been a folly effort and probably would have ended in their demise halfway across the Atlantic Ocean, because again, these are just very small boats that are not seaworthy in that way. People also say, okay, maybe they sailed to the original area that they were going to try to colonize further north of Roanoke. But then again, there's no indication that that ever happened either, because then what happened to them there? There's another theory that's a little bit more bleak, in that the Native American tribes nearby Roanoke who were hostile to them ended up getting the better of them and killed them in like a massacre. And there are some written accounts of a quote-unquote massacre occurring on Roanoke Island from the 1600s that cannot be definitively proven, like these words are accurate. But when you look back at the investigation of John White on his return to Roanoke Island, he reported that there weren't any signs of a battle, no bodies, no bones. And it's possible, and people like to say, you know, okay, maybe the massacre did occur, but the Native Americans moved the bodies or moved the bones off of the island so that there wouldn't be any kind of trace. And it's also worth mentioning those footprints in the sand that I mentioned earlier when John White when he first went onto the beach of Roanoke after returning. He saw those fresh footprints that, to me, indicates someone was on the island there, that maybe, you know, and this might just be me thinking beyond my scope here, but honestly, it kind of just looks to me like someone was waiting for him and looking for him and ready to react when he arrived, which might be indicative of, okay, maybe there was some sort of insidious plot where the Native American tribes there were trying to cover up the fact that they had massacred all of the colonists. And this is possible. And another and fourth probably theory here is that the Spaniards eventually found them and somehow got them off the island or maybe even killed them. But this is unlikely due to the fact that Spain had been sailing up and down that coastline for quite a while. And even after Roanoke had disappeared, the colonists of Roanoke had disappeared, they were still sailing around. And there's no mention or records of Spain ever finding Roanoke. So unless some sort of large documentation or the stories of them finding Roanoke has disappeared, it's unlikely that this happened either. And a lot of these theories circle back to the, you know, okay, why did they leave? And some of them circle back to that they were forced out by some sort of hostile force, or that the island proved to be so inhospitable that they couldn't sustain themselves there. And these theories are bleak, yes, and they all point to the why, but the actual how and where. And if you're talking about these colonists moving, and this is just on a personal opinion of the situation, if you're talking about these lost colonists moving somewhere else, assimilating into another Native American tribe, or trying to build a colony somewhere else, trying to build their settlement somewhere else, it seems a little bit weird that there just isn't any real proof or records or writings of any kind that would say, you know, yes, this is where they were, right? As I said earlier, Jamestown was established only a few short years later in 1607. And if there were colonists that had moved somewhere else and started building somewhere there, they eventually would have met these Jamestown colonists and then been like, yeah, hey, we're the lost colony of Roanoke. There would have been some kind of talk. There would have been some kind of connection drawn. But there's just, it's just blank. You know what I mean? There's no records after John White returned and saw that Roanoke was empty. There's just no proof or long-withstanding story that, yeah, this is where the lost colonists went. And that's what seems so baffling to me, is the fact that they kind of just disappeared off the face of the earth and then never regained communication with any of the preceding colonists that ended up colonizing America. And that's what seems so strange to me. And that's what kind of makes me kind of indicates that, okay, maybe something unfortunate did happen to them, something insidious that ended up killing many of, if not all of the colonists there, because otherwise we might have more substantial proof that they actually did survive beyond the days after John White had come back. And yeah, we do have, like I said before, those little nuggets of like, okay, there were some Native American children with blonde hair, or there were some Native Americans that apparently could read the English word, that kind of, you know, gets your hopes up. Yeah, maybe they did end up assimilating with some Native American tribes. But this is where I'll get into my final theory, and then eventually to that will bleed into my actual personal theory as to what happened to these colonists. So the final theory I'm going to hit on here, and the reason that I left it out till the end, is because it's one of the more modern theories, because it's becoming more and more plausible as research is coming on. It's also one of the more extravagant theories as well. And this is that they had built a new fort at Site X. Now, Site X is this area that's about 50 miles into the mainland of America. And in John White's journal, where he was writing all of what we know about this incident, he talks about before he left, there were people, colonists, settlers there that were talking about moving anyways. And they were talking about moving to this location 50 miles inland. And he never stipulates or goes further and says, yeah, they ended up doing it. And in all reasonable doubt, he probably doesn't know if they ended up doing it, because again, he left and came back and they were gone. So there's some people that says, okay, no, they didn't go to Croatoan. They ended up following and were true to their word and went 50 miles into the mainland to build another settlement. And this theory is actually even further compounded when you consider a very specific map that was drawn by John White. And like I said way at the beginning of the podcast, John White was an artist and he was a cartographer. He drew maps, and he drew them very well. Actually, these maps that I'm looking at of his drawings are very intricate. They have colors. They're very, very well thought out. And historians look back at these maps and marvel at how accurate they are as well. So he drew this map of the Roanoke area, of Croatoan, of the coastline there, right? And it's very accurate. But what's interesting about this map, and there are some debate, there's some debate about when exactly he drew it, and that will become important as I explain this. But when you look at this map, you see something interesting. And this was found very recently, like I said, that there are some patch marks on this map. And when I say patch marks, this is how cartographers would fix errors in their drawings of maps. They would just put a patch over the errant markings, and then draw over that patch to complete the accurate map, right? That's how they do it. They didn't just restart a map. They just put a small little patch over it. And there were a couple of patches in his map. There's one patch that's towards the bottom that is exactly what you would think. It's just patched up over errant markings. And we know this because there's been some high-tech imaging taken of this map to look at what's underneath the patch. And so that first one that I just mentioned, the one that's lower on the page, it's just over errant markings, just as you would expect. But there's a second patch that's higher up on the page, that's further into the mainland, that is directly over what appears to be a diamond marking. And this diamond marking is, historians look at it and say, this is exactly what the symbol is for a fort or a fortification. And we know that John White did originally draw this diamond on this area in the mainland because it's the same color, the same colors that are used other places on the map. So he drew this diamond to symbolize a fortification of some kind, but then patched over it. And then to add to the mystery, he then, on top of the patch, drew the diamond again in invisible ink, or what is thought to be invisible ink. And, you know, this kind of takes you by surprise. Like, why would John White do this? He didn't know. As far as we know, he never wrote down that he knew about a fortification or knew that one was ever built. But where this diamond is, where this fort symbol is almost exactly 50 miles mainland into the mainland from Roanoke. So this fort area, if it was ever actually built, is exactly where the colonists said they would want to build one, right? And so this, it points to the theory that, okay, maybe they actually did build a fort at this site X. That's what people call it, site X, is where this symbol of the fort is drawn. And then you also have to ask, why did he go over the patch with invisible ink? And this kind of indicates, okay, so he was trying to keep something secret. He was trying to conceal something. And some historians like to look back at this and say, okay, he was trying to keep the location of this fort secret from maybe Spaniards who might want to get their hands on it and know about this information. And this seems logical, right? But then maybe he also, you know, and this is pointing to the idea, okay, he wanted some people to know. That's why he did it in invisible ink. When he finally got it back to England, maybe he wanted them to know. But again, he never wrote about why he did this. And you have to ask, why did he even draw this fort in the first place? Did he know that there was a fort there and then just never wrote about it? Like, questions abound when you consider this new information that came out recently about this site X. And things get even more complicated when you consider something called the Dare Stones. Now, in the 1930s, there were some stone tablets that were found right near where this fort is written on this map, this site X. Right near site X, there were these stone tablets found with writing on them. And the writing indicates that they are from Eleanor Dare, the daughter of John White. And Eleanor Dare is speaking to John White on these stones about the death of her child and some of the other colonists who, on this stone, if you were to believe that it's true, that it really was written by Eleanor Dare, it talks about the hostile Native American tribes killing her child and the other colonists. And I say if it's believed to be true because there were other stones that were found in this area that were proven to be fake, that were proven to be hoaxes, that were written by somebody modern recently and disguised as if they were written way back in the 1600s. And the reason that there's still some debate whether or not this first one is true is because the actual inscription, the writing on the stone tablet seems to be dated, really does seem to be dated back to the 1600s. So you have to take this stone and consider, okay, it was found in the area of this fort at this site X. And that indicates that at some point, Eleanor Dare was there. She was there and was able to leave this stone there. Which means that, okay, maybe some of the colonists did make it to site X. And this is where I will get into my personal theory, considering all of the facts that we have about this situation, about what happened to the lost colonists. Now, my theory centers around the idea of non-group cohesion, or that the group split up. Now, I cannot purport that I am the one that came up with this theory. Upon further research, I see that there are actually other people out there who have put this out there. But essentially, what I think happened is that the colonists at Roanoke, be it, you know, they had something that made it so they could not stay there, be it the hostile Native American tribes nearby and the escalating hostility towards them, or the fact that they couldn't sustain themselves on Roanoke Island. Either way, they decided they had to get off the island. But here's where the problem, and here's where they encounter the real problem, is that they can't agree on what to do. Like I said, they had been talking to John White earlier about how they have this idea of moving 50 miles into the mainland. And that's what some of them want to do. But then also some of them want to go with Manteo, the chief of the Croatoan tribe, that's south, about 50 miles south, to another island. And they think that they'll be safer there, where they're being supported by the Croatoan tribe. And I think that their main split happens because there are still some people, and then I had to do some research about this and learn about this. It's kind of interesting as well. But a lot of the Europeans that came across at this time, they had a sort of disdain for the Native Americans. And as I was doing research about this, a lot of the writings, the primary sources, they talk about the Native Americans and they use the word savages. That's how they refer to them. And this is just said to indicate that some of the Europeans coming over did not want to associate with the Native Americans, or thought lesser of them, thought of them as inferior. And you can see why at this thought that people, some of these colonists, would not want to assimilate with the Croatoan tribe. It's fine that they're there, but we don't want to assimilate. That's probably what some of them thought. And some of them thought, screw that, we need to survive first and foremost, let's assimilate. And I think this is where the rift began. I think this is where the split began. So what I truly believe happened, and I think Eleanor Dare was part of this first group of people that did move 50 miles mainland into that Site X, that area where the fort was said to be built, where it was going to be built. And then some of them, and I can't say it's half and half, but some of them went down to Croatoan Island and assimilated with the tribe there, which is why we have the reports of the blonde Native American children and Native Americans that can read the English written word at this time. That's why we have those reports. There were some that assimilated down on Croatoan. But then again, we have that split. We have some of the people going to Site X, where they thought they would build a settlement in the mainland. But I believe that when they got there, they didn't quite succeed in doing so. Because if they had, we would have archaeological evidence that a fort was built there, that some sort of settlement was built there, but we don't. All we have really around this area is that Dare Stone. And this Dare Stone is written, said to have been written, in 1591, which puts it 1 year after John White returned and saw nothing on Roanoke. And in his writings, he also doesn't say that he ever went inland either. So that being said, I think they did make it there to that Site X area. And very shortly thereafter, 1591, just 1 year later, they realize that things aren't working out for them. And I think unfortunate circumstances fall upon that split off group that went to Site X. I don't think they ever built their settlement. I think that if we are to believe what's inscribed on the Dare Stone, on that first Dare Stone, then they really were attacked. Some were killed, and they didn't have enough people there and didn't have enough supplies or the wherewithal to survive and to make a settlement. So they never did. And that's why we don't have any remaining people living there. We don't have any reports of people living there because they never survived. We don't have a fort or a settlement built there. There's no archaeological evidence of anything ever really being built there. And that's why that's not. And when you consider this theory that I've just purported here, it explains pretty much all of the question marks surrounding this event. But it should be said that, again, we don't have anything definitive that can prove what happened to these lost colonists. And that's why this mystery still stands today. We have tons of research going on all the time, tons of new things coming out, like very recently, like I said, that ring being discovered, that it wasn't actually during the timeline of the lost colonists. There's research always ongoing, and we're really looking for that one definitive thing that can say, yes, this is what happened to them, but we still don't have it. So we're still left to theorize, just like I have here. And I hope that through listening to this episode, you've come up to your own theories and maybe have an idea of what happened to these lost colonists. And if you do, I would love to hear about it. You can go ahead. I have a post on my Facebook page about this podcast. You can go ahead and just respond to that post. Give me your theories. I'd love to hear them. And I hope that my theory has sufficiently spurred your imaginations, and that this could have gone so many ways, and there could have been a combination of many theories in all likelihood about what happened to these lost colonists at Roanoke. And this is where I will draw this episode to a close. I thank you all for listening, as always. Thank you so much for supporting this podcast. Even just listening to it is amazing, and it's great to see. I don't have a huge following, but it's great to see that some people are enjoying my podcast. I hope you guys have been sufficiently entertained today with the lost colony of Roanoke. Like I said, it is a long-withstanding mystery that surrounds America and the founding of America that still maintains till today and still spurs the imagination of anybody who looks at it. And I hope that you guys have come up to your own conclusions on what happened, or maybe just want to do some of your own research and figure out what happened. As always, I have all of my sources listed on my Facebook page if you do want to continue researching on your own. But in any regard, I thank you again for listening to this podcast. I will be back next week on Thursday with another episode, as always. And like I said at the beginning of the episode, I hope that if any of you have some special events or special mysteries that you guys want me to cover that you know about that might be from your background, I'd love to hear them as well, and hopefully we can get that going one of these days as well. So thank you again. I hope that you guys can all stay safe out there and enjoy your week until next Thursday. See ya.